The following podcast contains opinion and explicit language. My name's Reese Jarrett.
And I'm Sarah.
And I'm Brett.
And this is The Raw Cut.
Intro music playing.
Welcome to the Raw Cut Podcast, a podcast of rich opinion, and I'd like to thank my two co-hosts with me today, Sarah and Brett, who've had them on at the beginning of this year.
Yes.
Thanks for coming.
That's okay. Okay. Love it.
Glad to be here. Yeah.
Well, what have you been doing in the weeks past?
We've been pranking, of course. Oh,
pranks, we are with the pranksters again.
I named that episode
The Pranksters.
The Pranksters. Thank you. Pranks Kids Arthritis. Yes. We came here and we did a prank because Reese does the filming for Pranks Kids Arthritis. So we pretty much brought some Nerf guns and it's his sister's birthday. No. 18th birthday, actually. So even better of a milestone. Yes. Happy birthday to Reese's sister. And we pranked her with some Nerf guns. So if you want to know exactly what an 18th-year-old birthday with Nerf guns prank looks like, go on to YouTube, Pranks Kids Arthritis, and
it won't be up just quite yet. Hold your horses.
Oh, there's like so many other pranks. I pranked Reese the other week.
Oh, yes.
This guy, Reese.
Pranked Reese.
I might have done a commentary.
Yeah, that's up on YouTube. That's pretty funny. Pranked Reese. Because I have two cameramen now for Pranks Kids Arthritis, Reese and another guy, Henry. And so I figured out that I can prank my cameramen, like both of them, because I have two of them. So I pranked Reese. We're going to prank. And we pranked Henry too. So
Henry, the new cameraman.
Henry, pranked him. With Reese's help, obviously.
Is that because we don't have to be extra nice to one cameraman anymore? Because we have two of them? Or is it just because we have an extra camera?
It's just
because
we have two of them. Now I don't have to worry about how am I going to prank Reese with a camera? Oh, wait, I already have a cameraman that can prank.
Okay. Well, this is a podcast for politics. So yes. Do you want to get into the week's politics and see what happened? Well, hear what happened.
Hear what happened.
So let's go. Let's get into it.
Today, I am announcing that the government will look at new measures to strengthen immigration laws, as well as new options for dealing with Australian citizens who are involved in terrorism. It has long been the case that people who fight against Australia forfeit their citizenship. We will also clamp down on those organisations that incite religious or racial hatred. The government will be taking action against hate preachers.
Good people from both sides of the parliament have worked together to strike the right balance between enhancing our security and protecting the rights and liberties that we respect and have fought so hard to defend.
It's clear to me that for too long we have given those who might be a threat to our country the benefit of the doubt.
Is there a Muslim Brotherhood?
I have no idea, David.
Is there a Muslim Brotherhood operating out there with Muslim doctors looking after terrorists?
I can tell you one thing.
And in the courts, there has been bail, when clearly there should have been jail.
Well, that's the end of the judicial system as we know it.
Well, this week, one of the big things that happened in politics, as you just heard then, was Tony Abbott talking about this new terror laws.
Mm-hmm.
He's going on about how he is going to remove doubt from the legal system and
<Good luck.
laughs> and lock up all the terrorists.
Yes, lock and key.
That's probably one of the big issues that people have cited, is that at the beginning of the week, because he's put out a lot of press conferences on this particular issue.
He has.
Because it's surrounding the report on the whole Man Monis incident in the Lindt Cafe in Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to do a report and we have to make sure we change a few laws when something tragic that happens in the media.
To make it look like they've done their job.
Oh, yes, they probably should have done it earlier. But so what they did is, at the beginning of the week, you can hear the birthday parties going
upstairs.
That's
right, pretty crazy birthday party.
I'm hoping the sound editor has removed some of that background noise.
What?
So I won't know quite yet because I haven't edited this yet. But
it's okay.
So the first video that he put out was that he is going on about trying to stop the benefit of the doubt in the system for these terrorists. And people have watched that and just go, if you take out the benefit of the doubt with prosecuting somebody, that is just destroying the whole law court system, the judicial system. That's destroying that. And so later in the week, he did another press conference talking about how this report is shocking because they released it on Sunday and it's shocking and everything. And then the day after, which was yesterday, at the time of we're recording this, he actually started talking about some policies. And he had a very long, very scripted press conference at the AFP. And he talked about how he's going to now stop the terrorists coming back into the country, which I don't know why he couldn't have done before, because apparently we know how many terrorists are out. So you'd think if they know how many terrorists are outside of the country, you know, trying to
get into
fight for this pseudo shithouse state, you know, this place that they're trying to claim as a country, you would think, you know, that they'll go, oh yeah, well, let's not let them back in, and if they come back towards us, we'll charge them with treason. You know, you'd think that would have happened months ago. But obviously not.
But, Brett, what do you feel on this subject?
I just don't know why they did it earlier. I thought that when we let people into the country, we did a background check on them. And if they have a background of, I suppose, uncertain history and convictions for certain things, I thought that we didn't allow them into the country. But it looks like it only goes a certain way.
So, yes, basically the policy is that if someone is a dual citizen of this country, they're going to revoke the Australian citizenship for that person. And if someone's only an Australian citizen who is fighting overseas, these are people who are fighting overseas, they will take away the welfare privileges and some consular services. So, I mean, that's sort of a bit like a duh, no-brainer sort of thing to do. And then he went on towards making, oh, the Muslim leaders should do more. The Muslim leaders should do more. And it's sort of patronizing to these Muslim leaders because they've actually done a lot. You know, you remember all of these videos of Muslim clerics saying, this is not us. This is not our religion. These people are frauds. And Tony Abbott is sort of just patronizing them, just saying the Muslim leaders to do more and needed to be a bit more vocal. They're vocal enough. I would think that they would be talking about this weekly in their mosque.
Hmm.
This would be a weekly occurrence.
I'm racist, so I'm just not going to really comment on this at all.
It's finally all coming out.
Whatever happened to whatever happened to that? Whatever happened to a white Australia?
Caucasian Australia.
No, white Australia. What are you
trying to say?
Hello, I studied Aboriginal history. White Australia.
Wow.
Yes, if you haven't figured out from the first ever episode of the Rock Up podcast, Sarah is a racist.
Not to that extent of how bad other people that are in my community are, because I have opened up and accepted.
What the?
I can say something really hilarious right now. I've opened up
and
accepted.
The brown people down the street who are actually Arabic.
Oh.
Is that what you're trying to say, Sarah?
No, they're not. There's nobody that lives where
She's
I live.
Dug a hole.
That is a different. I have not dug a hole.
Yes, you have dug a hole.
I have opened up.
Did you chase them out with pitchforks?
It's a podcast. You said that there's views here. No, I did not chase them out with pitchforks. That's what happens in trick movies.
Sticks?
Ice sticks.
Fire sticks.
Oh, fire sticks.
Ice sticks.
I mean, four.
And ice sticks and ice cubes and icicles.
No, see, where I live is way too far away from civilization, so why do refugees and stuff want to come
back? I live in a country town. I have a right to be racist.
That's right. I can be racist. We have a pub and a bakery and a general store. We used to have a foddery, and you guys probably don't even know what that is. What's
no.
a foddery? That's right. They don't even know what a foddery is. A foddery is where you go and buy horse and cattle supplies.
Oh.
Yeah, you just learned something. See, that's how country I am.
I don't have any horses or cattle in the city.
The final thing that Tony Abbott decided to announce.
I like talking about this.
Well, the final thing that Tony Abbott announced was to sort of open up the vilification laws, or sort of propose wider vilification laws to try and silence certain people talking about certain extremist views on the internet, maybe on social media, and also fund a section of a government body to be able to sort of counter-react the social media that's coming out of the IS. Social media machine, the media machine, is quite large, as we have known. They've got a print magazine called The Beak, and then they've got all of these social media accounts where they continuously publish videos. Tony Abbott did refer to the social media accounts being publishing over 100,000 tweets a day or something like that, which I think is a bit fanciful. But
with the hashtag?
Well, all of the social media accounts that they control will be combined with all the different languages they do. He says that's how many tweets or messages that they're sending out in the day is 100,000 a day, which I think is a real high number.
That's a lot of tweets. But it's a lot of
I think we need to see John Barron do a fact check on that.
So our taxpayers' money is going to tweeting.
Yes.
So, yes, basically, you could get a job in this. You could get a job in this. Tweeting for the government. People.
Tweeting Brett, for the government.
You're the social media guy here. You can get a job here and tweet the IS people and say, stop stabbing people. Yeah.
Hashtag stop. Hashtag stabbing. Hashtag we love you.
I actually saw an article yesterday about ISIS. Is it ISIS or IS?
IS is the technical IS. Term. Okay. But people IS. Call it ISIS so it doesn't get mixed up with IS. Because I think some American TV networks have had problems where they've put IS in capital letters, so it would technically be IS pronounced.
Yep.
But the news pronounce is like...
But they're Americans.
The terrorist group so. is bombing... what?
Oh, that one. Okay.
So that's why a lot of the people try to call it ISIS, but... Yes.
Yeah, whatever.
So what's this article?
Anyway, I saw this article about IS threatening to attack Rome. Threatening to attack Rome and then...
Are you talking about the Westfield people? No?
No, that's in Africa.
No, they're threatening to attack Rome, and Rome has started doing these hilarious tweets back about they don't care. I can't remember off the top of my head, but yeah, this is all on social media.
So
the Westfield thing that you were talking about refers to in Canada or something, and then it came over to Australia asking if they're going to up there and whatever, and I'm like, why? So why?
The Westfield thing was basically that the terrorists, someone that looked like a completely different ISIS video, it looked like it was produced in a studio. It didn't have the traditional logos of the ISIS flag on from the footage that I've seen from it, but basically they're threatening Westfield shopping centers worldwide for that people are going to come and attack all of them, because obviously they have the human capability to attack every single Westfield shopping center around the world.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah,
never know.
They'll go to Mitre 10 and buy a nail gun.
Oh, please don't let me have to think about that.
Is Westfield worldwide?
Yeah, Westfield as well. I think it started here and then expanded, I think especially in North America.
Yeah, it started here and went to America. Oh, obviously, really? That's where most people go from here.
Yeah, so as I said, Tony Abbott, people have been worrying about how he's going to affect civil liberties here, because that's one of the main issues, is that he's going to start censoring people. He's going to possibly use these laws to start censoring people and maybe even censor the wrong people, maybe media outlets.
Excuse me, I think I have something in my throat. Anyway, keep going.
Come on, spit it.
You can't censor people. What are you trying to be like that movie 1984 where there was the god that controlled everything that everybody said and did, and that you couldn't have been, you've never read the book or seen the movie or seen the play?
No. Oh, how old is this?
That's really old.
Okay.
Really old.
So old, aren't I?
Jeez, how old you are.
The oldest person here.
I think that the problem is that the civil liberties that have been set up with the judicial system and freedom of speech, you know, he's been going on about 18C, we have to repeal it, we have to have freedom of speech, we have to let people vilify other people, and now he's sort of done this 180 turn, a bit of a backflip on that, and so, oh, we have to clamp down on freedom of speech now. I think his official stance is like, oh, you can offend the black people, but you can't offend the...
you just call them black.
So?
You're so racist.
But I think that's what Tony Abbott's thinking is. Okay. You can offend the black people all you like. That's fine. You can do all that.
You just called them black again.
But a terrorist can't say you can bomb a building.
Don't ignore me.
Mike, I'm trying to get a sentence out here.
Okay.
Stop interrupting.
No, he's interrupting me when you're I'm racist, talking. So, but yes, yes.
People have been going on about this particular sentence is that he says, police act because they have enough facts to make informed judgments. Some of these raids may not result in prosecutions, but frankly, I'd rather lose a case than lose a life. So he's saying, oh yes, let's lock people up and try and prosecute them.
Mm-hmm. And waste taxpayers' money.
Yeah, and waste taxpayers' money without any sort of solid evidence that they're actually going to do something.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest problem here is that he's got this mindset and it might actually be enacted into law.
Sort of racist as well. Oh, look, that person looks like they might do something. Let's lock them up and feed them and educate them and stuff or whatever they do in prison. Obviously, I don't know what they do in prison because I'm a good girl.
Someone's never been to prison before.
I've never been to prison. I don't ever plan to go anywhere.
Just make sure near those pranks
stuff.
Don't get out of hand, Sarah.
That's right. Those pranks will never get out of hand.
So,
I'm another, a little girl.
Another thing that has just sort of developed today is that Peter Credlin has got mentioned in a resignation letter for a former, I think it was the former Liberal Party, the party treasurer, sort of the treasurer in the party organization, not on the in the government in itself. And he resigned and he decided to name Peter Credlin in the letter. He named her in the letter because her husband also works for the party. And this is sort of thinking that, oh, it's a conflict of interest. So Peter Credlin is the advisor to Tony Abbott. She's that very stern-looking woman with the blonde hair. Not blonde hair, brunette. That's a very terrible mix-up there. It's a very stern woman that sort of stands around Tony Abbott a bit. Because she always looks fairly stern. She tries to make herself look like she's in control.
It doesn't work if we're thinking of the same person.
Not Tony Abbott's wife. Another thing is Tony
Abbott advisor,
has someone advising him what to say. And he still comes out with all this stuff.
Crap.
All this garbage.
Peter Credlin.
So, he has a wife.
The reason why all this stuff is going around about Peter
Credlin.
He has
children.
He does have children. And no.
Imagine. I don't even.
This
yeah,
is
they do.
Be heavily edited
yes.
episode.
They do.
Three daughters.
Are you sure he has three daughters?
Is one of them gay?
This is the bit that needs to be edited.
No.
I'm not sure.
There's something. I can't quite remember it, but I think there is a one of them.
Maybe just for show. Maybe just to see that he's open. So one of his daughters.
Oh, okay. So one of his daughters is black too.
And
we're getting out of hand here. We probably should move out of the unscripted stuff and onto the scripted stuff.
Anyway, sorry, Reese. I'm sure Tony Abbott has lovely daughters.
One lovely gay daughter. Let's start with daughter retention.
Oh, come on.
Let's move on.
According
to
Sarah, anyway.
I did not say that. You did. I just pointed at him.
So let's move on to data retention. Now, it's a very similar topic to what has been happening in the whole terrorism thing, because that's one of the part of the reasons that they want to do data retention is for the terrorist thing.
Terrorism.
Now, data retention is a very hot topic at the moment, and Tony Abbott is really adamant on passing it into law. A former police employee talked to ABC Radio National's Download This Show recently about how data retention currently works and the police process behind it. So here's some portions of that interview, and his voice has been disguised for anonymity.
The Australian people are being sleepwalked into a system the Attorney General cannot even articulate. Right now, it would be so easy for me to slip in my ex-girlfriend's number in the current process under any investigation and no one would pick it up because there's no detail. Ideally, I'm okay with 2 years. Basically keep my phone bill, including receive calls, but no retrospective access, i.e. torrenting becomes illegal in 3 years, no going back. I'd like the crime threshold to be lifted to 10 years. It easily still covers offences like terrorism, serious and organised crime, I think there also needs to be a standardised reporting of access. We report the number of requests, but not the number or the type of requests made. I want a magistrate or a totally independent party to authorise the request with more detail.
I didn't add the music, by the way, but personally, I believe that data retention is really politically wrong and an invasion of privacy. Mm-hmm. So, but if it was to happen, if it was to be, I would feel a lot easier if security was really put in place. And as you heard from him, there isn't a lot of oversight. There isn't a lot of security in the system. He said he can really probably easily punch his ex-girlfriend's number into the system and just track her. With a government utility. And this isn't unusual, and the Americans have done this continuously, especially during the Iraq War, looking at naked photos, listening to phone sex conversations during the Iraq War under the title of Homeland Security, of we have to make sure people are secure, but we have to listen to your phone sex calls. It's really bizarre. So wouldn't it feel a lot better if there is just this security in place?
I think technology is moving way too fast and people just can't keep up. And then people that know about this stuff, they don't know how to stop it because they're using it, like the army's using it for their own good. For their own gains, I suppose, from what you're talking about. But yeah, it's definitely moving quickly and there's not the things in place to block it, to stop it from happening. And people don't know how to do it, or people just don't want to do it because of the things that they can do with it and invade people's privacy.
It surprises me that this could even happen. Someone could track. Someone who's a government employee could just track whoever the hell they want to without any oversight. I mean, that's what happened in the USA. That's what Edward Snowden has talked about, and that's what he's released.
Is this any phone calls?
It's metadata, so it's not necessarily the content, because you do need a warrant for that, but the metadata, who's going to where, who's talking to who, what IP addresses are recorded, and maybe possibly the location. So
if your location device
if you're enough of a stalker, and you could probably do some real damage with that. Now, another problem he was talking about in the interview, I think it was a other section of the interview. So if you want to listen to all of it, go to download this show. There's a link in our show notes on therawcut.com.au, but download this show on the ABC Radio National website. And they were talking about how this data doesn't even need to legally be stored in Australia. It can be stored overseas. And one of the big problems with having this metadata stored in a single spot is what the term that they've been using is a honeypot. They're basically creating a honeypot for hackers. And if hackers put enough time and effort into something, they will get in and they will steal all of that private information. And this is one of the big issues that I have with this system that they're trying to propose, is that a hacker will basically be able to target a centralized system and then get their information for themselves and use it for whatever reasons of fraud and all that type of thing. Do you think this should be something in Australia? This should be something that the telephone companies manage on their own premises. Wouldn't you think that?
Yes, that's right. I'd like to say something. Mum, I know you're listening because you love listening to Reese's podcast, but don't worry. Nobody wants to hear your phone conversations with me about where we're going to dinner. Okay? It's okay. Nobody's going to hack into your stuff. Okay? Because you live... No, nobody wants to know. So don't worry. Nothing's bad's going to happen. But yes, I do think that the telco providers should do something about it. Put something in place, whatever that is. I don't know about this stuff.
I think they should. So it's up to the telecom companies to track it at the moment.
Yes.
They should
yes.
probably keep it at
they,
that.
They use fax to send AFP. No, ASIO uses fax, that little piece of paper technology, to be able to go, oh, yes, we want this piece of data for this particular person.
Yeah. So, obviously, all the data's in different spots. It's not one centralized location where if a hacker gets in, they can access everything.
Yes.
Which is, I think, very important.
What they want to do in this legislation is make it easier to retain it all in a in a centralized system. Let's just say that it might not be in the same location physically, but it'll be a centralized system. So it'll be everybody talking to each other.
Yeah, no, that's not a good idea.
No.
Because if it get, as you said, if it gets on the wrong hands, people can do anything with it.
And may I just say flatly, this should be something that a warrant is needed for.
Yeah.
Any sort of tracking, really, you shouldn't need to just go, oh, fuck the warrant. You know, you should be able to go to a magistrate or a judge and say, I want to track this person for this reason, and we have this preliminary evidence here for why we want to track him. It's simple. Just get the fucking warrant. And one of the problems is that they're just doing this for small, silly little crimes like graffiti. You know, let's use this sort of data.
There's worse things in the world.
Like, there is worse things in the world. They're using it for anything that can be prosecuted over 2 years in jail, which apparently graffiti falls into that.
So don't graffiti area. People.
And they're probably going to... So we got the
She's a racist, but you don't graffiti, Sarah.
Well, don't break the law. The law is not a thing to mess with.
Racism.
Duh.
Oh, I haven't done any sound effects. I think.
Don't mess with the law.
Don't mess with the law. There we go.
That's right. Don't mess with the law. Police are there for a reason and they're to keep us safe. But if you want to get on the other side and, you know, here in South Australia, they want to defect people's cars. Well, if you're not going to do the right thing on your car and the police are going to pick you up, then of course you're going to see them as a bad thing. But, you know, if I was in the middle of the city and it was a Saturday night and there was a older guy chasing me or stalking me or something and I felt unsafe, I'd feel quite safe walking up to a police officer and being like, hello, I've just walked from here to here and there's a person following me. Like, you know, I feel safe going up to them. But with all this stuff.
Yeah, the metadata, it's sort of going, they're going to keep listening to you here.
Yeah, we're
going
to watch
we're
you
going
while
to
you
be
do it.
Big brother.
But if this stuff does come in useful, you know, if some one time at my old work, there was a person that was coming and she was, they didn't know where she was. So she was classed as a person that was lost and they were trying to find her. Mm. And she would come into the gym and I had no idea that she was one of these people until one day the police came in and they said that they'd been tracking her and they knew that she had been coming here and wanted to know if we'd seen her. And then obviously I had to say that I had seen her. But so it comes in handy in situations with a person that is lost.
A missing person's case.
Yeah, she was a missing person. And so they'd used it to find her.
Okay.
Yeah, so it comes in handy with that sort of stuff.
Missing person's cases aren't technically a jail sentence for 2 years. So they're actually going against the current regulation to do that.
To find her. Well, I don't know if they use metadata or whatever. I don't know, but they said that they'd use something to try and find her, which is, I think that's a good thing.
I mean,
if somebody is missing,
personally, I think that's
a legitimate
use.
Yes, track their phone. That's a legitimate use, yes. If you're trying to find them, use everything you can to try and find them because, like, so many people go missing every day in Australia and most of them don't ever get found again.
Mm. One of my problems is that they're just going to use it for crap. I think councils get access to this metadata as well, and I think they've been, you know, prosecuting people for illegal dumping and that type of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just using for little bits of crap that really don't know. We don't need to use this system for this sort of juvenile, crappy, little, stupid laws. These things, I mean, obviously they're in place for a reason. We don't want people graffitiing everywhere, for example. But why use this particular system to prosecute someone
for graffitiing?
For graffitiing. It just sort of seems a bit far-fetching for an invasion of privacy.
Don't they have, like, when people graffiti, isn't there, like, tags or something that people graffiti?
Yeah.
You know, why can't one time people next door, their house got broken into and the people had graffiti all over their walls, but they'd written their tagline there and the police knew, they said they knew who it was, and then apparently the person got arrested because they'd used their tagline and the police knew about the tagline because obviously they save it or whatever. I don't know, I'm not a cop. But yeah, they were able to find it that way. People graffiti, normally, like when we were going into Melbourne last year, there was a whole wall of just graffiti with people's different taglines. And as you were driving along this past this wall, there'd be the same tagline multiple times. And this was like a 2K wall of just graffiti.
This was the train, wasn't it?
Hmm. I mean, whichever. Yeah, train graffiti track. Is a problem, but there are other ways to get the suspects, and you don't need to use this sort of
meta tracking stuff. This
tracking, it really should only be used for major crimes. Something like murder, something like planning a terrorist attack. So those major crimes, oh yeah, I can see a use for metadata. But for just tracking everybody at every single time, putting it into one system, and then getting it out for bits of crap that they're really, it's bizarre. It's just getting it out for bits of crappy little silly offences that it just blows really over my head. They don't really matter. Half of them are probably non-violent.
Yeah, that's right.
Well,
kids get bored.
Moving on to our final topic today, and we're going to talk about drugs at music festivals now.
Woo! Talking about
music festivals. Oh my gosh.
How was that one last week?
Such a rebel.
I wasn't. I was working there.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, such a rebel.
Boo. I will be going to one following week.
Oh, there we go. It doesn't play the first time. So you're such a rebel.
I know.
Oh, yeah. So drugs at music festivals are a big problem. And mm-hmm. The police often have a fairly large presence at these festivals with sniffer dogs. But now doctors... You're doing my sound effects in the microphone.
I mean, a sniffer dog.
But now...
Reese, do you have any drugs on you? Isn't it when the dog sits? I'm sitting. That means I'm surrounded by illegal drugs.
Another talent Sarah.
I'm not.
Another hidden talent of Sarah. She's a sniffer dog.
I'm sure you could be a sniffer dog too.
No, I don't think I can.
Yeah, so they have these sniffer dogs at the music festivals, and doctors are now sort of going, maybe this isn't the best way to go about it. We're continuously doing the same thing. Maybe we should be trying something different.
The young people who are consuming these products don't really care for a message that seems to be based in the 1950s. You consume alcohol at an extraordinary rate. The idea of a drug-free Australia is ludicrous. And so what we need to do is to, rather than concentrate on making sure that people don't consume drugs, that they don't get hurt when they choose erroneously to consume drugs. This could easily have killed somebody.
Yeah. Dr. David Caldicott monitors the drugs that come through hospital emergency departments.
If a patient presents to the emergency department as a consequence of intoxication and they have product in their possession, we test it very quickly and find out what it is.
In this laboratory, they're also testing for unknown contaminants which can kill.
It allows us to release information to consumers in real time and to prevent further people getting hurt.
He wants to take this drug testing technology to music and dance festivals.
All around Europe there are programs in place where drug checking occurs very regularly, to the extent, say, for example, in Switzerland, where they bring a shipping container worth of analytical equipment to some of the biggest raves in Switzerland for the purposes of identifying drugs straight from the consumer and feeding back directly to the consumer.
Your drug checked a few moments ago.
Yes.
What was the result?
The result was 39% cocaine and 42% phenacetin. It's a painkiller.
So it's not good?
Not really good, no.
So what are you going to do with it?
We're going to throw it away. We are not going to use it.
We know for a fact that when there is a pill testing program in place, that consumers actually change their behavior. If the result of a test on a pill is something other than what they thought it would be, they frequently elect to abandon taking that pill. And we have the opportunity to let them know and interface with them about how they can moderate their behavior.
So, pretty interesting stuff there. They're using what is scientific grade testing equipment to be able to test the pills. So people come up to them in their booth and they test their pills and just say, oh, does this have bad stuff in it? Yes. Oh, no, this is a little bit safer and, you know, that sort of thing.
It's really, really strange. I never thought of something like that. So they literally go to these festivals. People go there and they get their drugs tested. They find out exactly what's in it because obviously you get stuff like cocaine and when they go through the dealers, it gets cut and it puts other, you know, stuff like chalk and all sorts of shit that goes in there. Then cut it so obviously they can make more money. So if they're getting this cocaine that's, you know, more than half this painkiller and then the other half's cocaine, there's really bad stuff in it besides the drug itself.
Yeah, and so what the idea is to, you know, help people be safe. That's the whole thing. And that's the police's mentality too, by the way.
Yeah, that's right.
Help people be safe by force.
Yep.
And so let's, you know, they're taking the subtle thing here. So the doctors or the scientists are taking the subtle route here saying, well, let's be realistic here. There's never going to be a drug-free Australia. The drug war is a farce, to be honest. This whole idea that we can get every single drug out of Australia, everyone's going to be absolutely healthy, is just a farce. That's not going to happen. So let's have focus here and try and get people to consume the safe stuff. And
relatively safe stuff.
Yeah, or the relatively safe stuff. I mean, it's still drugs and still bad things can happen. But having changing this mindset, I think, is going to work a lot better than their use of force as they do now.
Mm. I find it really funny how he called it a rave. It's so English. It's so old as well.
Is that what your dad says?
No. It's what my English cousins say when going off to a rave. I'm just like, does that mean you're going nightclubbing? They're like, oh, yeah, no. We're going to a rave. We call it rave over here. I'm just like, but it's a nightclub. And they're like, oh, you're going to a rave. No, I'm going to a music festival. Not a rave. It's a music festival.
Do you think a drug-free Australia is going to be possible?
No, because the prescription medications, I suppose you can find stuff in there that isn't so good as well. And you can get that out of it and stuff over the counter. You can take stuff out of that and make it something that's not too good.
But with the effect of synthetic drugs now, there's always going to be something new on the market.
That's right. Everybody wants a way to make money.
And I think by the numbers, those over-the-counter drugs that you can get from the pharmacy, the chem store, they're actually killing more people than these illegal drugs.
Really?
So the focus is on these illegal drugs because they're illegal, but there's more stuff actually killing people out there, sort of drug-related or alcohol-related, that is killing people that is completely legal. We can't, you know, alcohol, that's poison.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We can't not ignore this, that in this conversation.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's damaging more people than all of these other drugs.
Because people don't know how to stop. You know, like we had the big truck that came around and taught us about drugs and alcohol when we were in primary school. Do you guys remember that?
The big giraffe.
Yeah, that came around and taught us. Life Be In It trailer. That's right, Life Be In It. They came around and they taught us, don't do this, don't do that. But if you're going to drink alcohol, some people, you know, that are our age, they're just like, let's just keep drinking until I pass out. No, that's not what alcohol's for. Alcohol is, everybody's different when they're drinking alcohol. You know, Brett, you just have it at parties because, you know, it gives you a fun effect, I suppose, but you don't drink too much of it that you're out the back vomiting, like Peter. like our other prankster. Or falling asleep.
The people listening to the show know who Peter is.
Oh, yeah, they do. Peter's the other guy that came in that said a bad word to introduce himself and started with an F. But, you know, I'm never going to take drugs. I take drugs or medication for my arthritis, but it's not the illegal, it's the stuff that's there to help me so that I can walk and talk and breathe and everything like that. And so I've got no sort of wantingness to do that, and I don't surround myself with people who do it, but you're always going to have those people that are like, I just want to try it once. I just want to see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And then if they like what happens, they'll either do it or they'll do it again, or they might take more or they might take the same amount.
And they might just never do it
or
again.
Or they might just not. That's right. I might just not do it again. But
people that will and people that won't. Yeah, and people that continually will and people that continually won't. It's more about people abusing the drugs rather than people, I suppose, just that the drugs are, in general, are completely bad. And, you know, that, you know, obviously how Reese was saying with the police, they're attacking the war on drugs, they call it.
Yeah, the war on drugs. You have to say it in a deep voice and you have to be official.
That's right.
That's right. It's more
fucking
obviously.
Thing sucks.
Prescription medication is a good thing to a lot of people, and there are a lot of drugs that can help people. It's the way they're used. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. And there was a recent study done by, I think, a British bloke that sort of took the old study of putting a rat in a cage, and there's two bottles of water. One bottle of water is laced with ecstasy, and the other is just plain water. And the rat in the cage, it's just a simple cage and a rat in the cage. And that was used in the 60s, 70s, somewhere around there. The US used that experiment to say, oh, ecstasy is bad. This is how we proved it. Well, now this scientist, this researcher has done the same thing, but has put distractions with these rats. He's put more rats in one place. He's basically created homes for the rats. He's basically created rat heaven. It's a place where a rat wants to live.
Party,
exactly.
Party central for a rat.
There's food, there's all of this stuff, and there's the two bottles on the wall. One laced with ecstasy and one laced with plain water. And what they found with all these other distractions that simulate life for humans.
For a happy rat.
Yeah.
And they found, oh, they didn't want to have the ecstasy water. So, I think some of these studies that they've done in the past, and they've just flatly said, oh, shit, you know, we have to keep on standing by these studies, even though they're decades old. They're not entirely correct. And I think sometimes the whole study that they were just talking about was saying addiction isn't always going to work in the world, especially with other people, with society, and with people working, with people playing, people doing all these sort of things that they do in normal life, that is unlikely to get addicted, I think, was the outcome from that.
Oh, okay.
So I thought that was very interesting. And
was there a rave for these rats?
There might have been
a rave.
A little bit in the cutout of doof. There might have been little pub in the rat cage and flashing lights.
Warehouse party.
They could have like a subwoofer in the middle of the floor. They could just like bounce on it.
I think with this war on drugs thing, it's as it always is. It's always prevention is key. But here's a hint. Maybe if they get people that took these drugs or still take these drugs and interview them and ask them, what's the bad things about taking these drugs? Like, how does it make you feel? What are the long-term effects? Yes, let's get some older people that have taken it for ages. Older people, I'm meaning like 30s, that may have taken it when they were our age or when they're 20. And what are the effects they're having now from this drug? And then from that, figure out an advertising campaign to hit these people in the head. Social media is key.
I think what you would find if you take a younger group that is more into the whole drug scene than an older group, they you would find that the older group's out of the drug scene because they've got other things in their life besides that.
Yeah, that's right. So you can, but there would be some sort of effect that it would have had on them, maybe when they were, if they started taking it and then they started taking it regular, like if they started it, maybe they went to their first rave when they were like 20 and then they were like, I really love this drug and would take it all the time. And then their life caught up on them and they want to have kids and they want to settle down and all this stuff. I'm sure that some part of it, either their brain or reproductive or whatever, it would have affected them somehow. So then they could use that in an advertising campaign.
I mean, hard drugs like ecstasy and cocaine, that stuff is more.
They didn't do it right, though. That's it. They're social media. That's the number one thing. Like, they're calling the generation that's below us, that's now turning 14 and 15 and 16 and going and getting jobs, the Facebook generation. like they haven't really dealt with the face-to-face talking, and now they have to get jobs and they have to deal with grumpy old people. Well, good luck, because they don't want to know what Facebook is. Oh, they're not going to message you on Facebook.
I think we all know that issue.
That's right.
What skills do you have?
So that's sort of where you have to target them, is on social media, because that's where everybody is. That's our age group.
Yes. Or younger.
On and definitely
or
younger.
Or older.
Yes.
Your grandma's got Facebook, doesn't she, Sarah?
My grandma isn't on this planet anymore, so she might have Facebook up in heaven.
Someone else.
My great auntie has Facebook. That's
it.
Right. Has Facebook. She's on Facebook all the time. She's updating her status with selfies of a cat.
She figured out how to take a selfie on her tablet the other day.
She did. She did.
And tell everyone what your great auntie's cat's name is.
It's called Socks.
Okay.
She did. I don't know if she used to go to raves, but I don't think I'm pretty sure she didn't used to take illicit drugs or anything like that. But her view on all of this stuff is just don't take it, Sarah. It's bad. So obviously, I'm not going to.
Well, one of the reasons that they're finding that drug dogs are not working as well as the police like them to be or like to hope them to
it's
be.
It's because I pat them.
You're one of those people. You know what?
I had to say that when Reese was talking.
Don't pat the dog. Don't pat the dogs. Ma'am, don't pat the dog. No. Naughty. Don't pat the dog.
What's your name?
Naughty. Bad thing.
Yeah, I don't pat the dogs. I just wanted to say that to see Reese's reaction. So, but no, don't pat sniffer dogs. Okay, don't even talk to them.
So one of the problems is that people are seeing these sniffer dogs. They have the drugs on them. They know they have the drugs on them. Oh, shit, we're getting scared now. We pop all the pills at once.
Yep.
And they're basically ODing in the line to get into the festival and dying.
Yeah.
So they get scared and they have this reaction when, oh, shit, we have to do something here. And this is the problem with these drug dogs now. And so this is not just isolated incidents. This is happening regularly at music festivals.
And the people didn't know that, and now Reese just told them what to do when there's a sniffer dog coming. Just take all of them.
Yeah,
don't do that.
Take all of them and die is probably not the best suggestion to do.
Please don't do that. But give them to the police.
They take these pills in fear and OD. And one of the things is that people are saying is that there should be amnesty bins, as well as the testing in these festivals. There should be amnesty bins at the door saying, if you have drugs, put them here. We won't charge you. Because you said, oh, shit, we shouldn't be doing this. Just put them in the bin. You're being responsible. Go and have some fun.
Nobody's going to do that.
I'm sure.
If there's like, you know, when you walk into a door to a festival, there's like so many people around you. You're getting handed out condoms. You're getting a wristband on you. Like people are talking to you. There's people behind you and you just want to get in because you're probably wasted. I'm just pointing it right. And it's like, yeah, let's walk over and put my drugs in a bin.
Peter.
Let's put him in a bin. Maybe if there was like a marquee that you could go into that had on the front free water, butcher rubbish, 10-cent cans, because here in South Australia we recycle our cans for 10 cents, you know, like recycling bins, rubbish bins, and then there's just a pill bin there. Then sure, like a needle bin. But
yeah,
if you're just going to walk in,
like
there's going to be a bin. If there's just going to be a bin there that says drugs, please. But we won't fine you, but put them in the bin.
But people have suggested this because this problem of people ODing at the gate or just after they get into the festival because they've taken all the drugs at once is actually quite regular. Hmm. And they say, okay, have these amnesty bins where people could put their substances in there and they won't get arrested for it.
Maybe they need a pretty girl walking through the line just being like, I went to drugs. We won't touch you.
I'm sure there's that already.
Probably just walking around being like, we got him, put him in the bucket.
But it's an undercover cop.
See, that's the thing. You know, you don't want to, if a cop's walking around being like, just put your drugs in the bin, nobody's going to do that. They're going to see the sniffer dog and they're going to run.
In South Australia, there is the fruit fly zones. Basically, around fruit-producing areas in the Murray River land, you go to a certain part of the area where the fruit fly zones is. No fruit flies here. They don't want that because it has problems with their fruit that they're growing. And one of the things that they do is they put a bin on the side of the road saying, if you're traveling with any fruit in your car, put your fruit in this bin here and you won't get arrested for anything. Because if you carry fruit in from outside of that fruit fly area, you're going to get arrested because that's what the fruit fly targets.
That's right.
And having that sort of system in place where people can just put, oh yeah, just put that there. It's in the corner. It's no one else is standing around it. Just if you put it there, we won't mess with you. And I think that system is going to work really well.
Have you ever been over to Perth, for example? Like driving along the Nullarbor, you get to the Perth border village. And
I think it's at all borders.
This one is only there.
Okay.
Because I've been through every other border. But this one, going into Western Australia, it's a big thing. It's a huge, big concrete building, and there's people there, and if you've got a caravan on behind or a pop top, we had a pop top, so it's a thing that folds down, then it pops up, and we had to get out of the car, and these people searched our car for any fruit, so you got all your fruit out, mm-hmm. and so they would just take any fruit and veggies that you had chopped up and put on a sandwich, and if, I suppose it's not that big of an issue because they've only got that in one border, but also if had they the same, put it everywhere else.
Also had the same thing getting on the ferry to Tasmania.
Yes, on the ferry as well, but that's not in South Australia. Really? But
yeah,
you've got it. They will check everything. So maybe something like that isn't police, but maybe a person who is working helpful at the festival can just
kind.
Yeah, that's right.
Not a nice, like they're going to
a
kill
nice
you.
Looking person like me, just being like, "Hey, do you have any drugs? I'm now going to search you." But obviously, you have a female and a male because I wouldn't feel very comfortable doing that.
Frisk them.
Yeah, well, not frisk them, but ask them nicely and be like, "Okay, you've been warned. If you get picked up, then you've been warned about it."
Yeah.
But not. Yeah. I think the whole point having the police officers in the line also causes people to do the OD. But if you do it when they're in there, then the chances are sort of going down because they would have had time to, I suppose, spread the drugs so then other people would be picked up with it as well.
Yeah, and then that's one of the other problems is that they have all these little techniques, these drug dealers have these techniques to get into the festivals and do all that. But I think for the average Joe Blow who is just having some drugs for a fun time, they see the dogs at the door, but there might be an amnesty bin or a testing facility right next to the entrance.
Yeah.
They'll probably go, oh, I might go over here. They would probably take that rational decision to go over here. And now, let's have a listen to the police response to this idea. Let's listen to what they think about this whole idea.
It's not an approach we will take.
Yeah, so let's just leave it alone. Fuck off. But we're doing our thing here.
Yeah, just let us let people OD themselves in the line and let's continue to let other people also do the same thing at all music festivals and walk around with a sniffer dog everywhere. Do something about it if you really care about it.
So basically their answer was this. So, yeah.
Let's focus on something that's going to get us money rather than us spending money.
Well, should we wrap up the show?
With that last lovely quote, yes.
Yes, let's wrap up the show.
I don't know what that means, to play us out. What does that mean? To end the show?
Yeah.
Well, I would like to thank Brett and Sarah.
Sarah's dancing.
Sarah's dancing to
it's
the
right
music.
To the music.
There's no music yet.
There was music, though.
There is music. Turn your headphones off.
Headphones off.
Jeez.
Seriously.
Wow.
Well,
thank you, the pranksters, for joining me for this episode of the Walk Up Podcast.
You can check us out on YouTube or just go to kidsarthritis.org, and you can check out all the behind the scenes action, so a photo from today as well, on our Instagram and Facebook to learn more about why we're doing this.
So we put all the videos up on youtube.com/pranksforkidsarthritis, all one word with the number 4.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you very much for coming here, and you can catch more of me at rawcut.com.au. Of course you should know that. You download this podcast from there, hopefully. No, you'll probably also be getting it on iTunes. So if you don't know our website, you can go to rawcut.com.au and you can get more stuff there, write a bit of articles and do some more video work other than what I do for this Prankster Mob. And thank you very much for listening. My name's Reese Jarrett. This has been the Raw Cut. See you later.
Bye.
See you.
We'll hear you later. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.